is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news and intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversations. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
This is Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto with my co-host Dr. Wesley Francis, who is a Bahamian surgical oncologist and general surgeon, and we're pleased to have as our third host again in the studio Mr. Calvin Green, who is a veteran of the tourism industry and the hotel industry. He's a community leader and a church leader. Welcome, Mr. Green, and good evening, Mr. Dr. Wesley Francis.
Good evening, Bahamas. It's always great to be here so that we could discuss certain topical issues with the Bahamian people. And Mr. Green, it's always a pleasure to have you.
It's always good to be between two good doctors, Dr. Francis and Dr. Pinto, so I can't lose. Thank you.
Okay, so this is a very decisive period of time, particularly in the next coming week, but this is an apolitical show in every form, so we're not going to go down that road, but we're going to talk about something that's very important.
We're not going to talk about
politics? No, we're not.
We're just going to advise the Bahamian people to do the right thing. And you know what the right thing is? Just to go out and vote.
And
be civil with each other.
I agree wholeheartedly.
Yes, that's really all that we're saying. Be civil. Vote. Because a lot of people might have, you know, went through a lot to give us the right to vote. And so this is the one right that's being afforded to us. And so we should exercise that right. And that's all we could say.
I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. But let's try and speak on a topic that would be a bit more unifying that we can all agree upon, and that is what's coming up on Sunday, and that's Mother's Day. So life doesn't come with a manual. It comes with a mother. So just in my own life, to the women who gave me everything without asking for anything in return, my beautiful wife, Belle, the mother of my children, my mother, Joan Pinto, my aunt, Linda Davis, who recently celebrated her birthday, looking young as ever, to my mother-in-law, who's in South Africa, both my late grandmothers, maternal and paternal. On this Sunday, Mother's Day, we honor the mothers who gave us life, who gave us love, who gave us strength, even in silence. But Dr. Wesley Francis, as surgeons, we rely heavily on the mother of our children. We rely heavily on our wives. If it wasn't for them, they hold the family together.
Absolutely.
They're the foundation of our existence. They are the pillar of strength in our lives, emotionally, physically, in every other way. And in some regards, they single-handedly raise our children.
Absolutely. They're
while we are sacrificing for the community, sometimes our families are the ones who actually are having the greatest of sacrifices, because it's quite often we'll have a typical 16, 18-hour days. Some surgeries take 5 hours, 7, 8 hours. We have multiple surgeries. If you're on call, one surgery, going in, trying to stabilize a patient, get them optimized for surgery, doing the surgery, being there postoperatively, getting them into ICU. One major trauma can take 8, 9 hours of our lives. And sometimes on call, we have multiple surgeries or traumas that we need to deal with.
Especially during training. I remember, you know, back in Detroit, when hospital around 3, 4 a.m. in the morning, you come back home 10, 11 at night, and then again, you just rinse and repeat.
Yes.
You're doing that ongoing. And, you know, I would say this, you talk about, you know, the mom being at home taking care of the children. I can say personally that my son, who's now, who's 25 now, I remember I hardly ever saw any of his developmental milestones because I was just working. But she was there with him every day.
Yes.
And she raised our children. And without her, I don't think that I would have become, you know, the person that I am today, the success, the surgeon, to accomplish the goals. And so that's you know, that's something that we need to, and mothers do that all the time. They sacrifice for the family, and that's why they're the matriarch.
I mean, it was for many years. I had 7 day weeks. There was never a break. I've tried to cut it down to 6 day weeks, but even then, many times, even for my daughter, for example, I would leave before she wakes up and come home, and she's still
sleep.
She's already gone to sleep. So it's only one in her life is my wife and her mother. So mothers embody unconditional love. I mean, one can never find a better friend than your mother when you're young. A mother must be cherished, respected, honored, and loved. And because one day she may not be there and no one will be able to replace her. So we go to Exodus 20:12. It says, honor your father and your mother so that you may live long in the land of the Lord is giving you. So therefore, showing your mother love, respect, empathy, kindness, understanding, with the willingness to lend your hand when it is needed is exactly what that is saying. But I just want to say something to you, Calvin Green, as a Christian, as a youth leader in the church. We all have to acknowledge in this difficult times that not every mother in our society is a good mother, and that's unfortunate. And I think our society and the breakdown of our families is suffering because of it. But do you believe in wholeheartedly honoring your mother and all mothers, no matter what the circumstances, whether you have a deceptive or neglectful mother or an abusive mother, a mother who allowed abusive boyfriends successfully over the years to sexually abuse you as a young girl and as a teenager, mothers who were never home, they were always in the bar or bringing a parade of men in and out of your life or basically selling every possession the family has to get drugs. Not every woman, every mother is honorable, but the Bible says that you must honor them. What is your response to that?
Well, my response to that is that I believe one of the greatest things of the gospel is what they call forgiveness. No matter what happens, the Bible always asks you to forgive. And some really, really terrible things happen, and you know that you can't explain, and you can't live by. But what do you do? And what I wanted to say at the beginning of this, though, is that when you think about it, think about the day you were born, and from the day when you came out of your mother's womb, as they say, you could not do anything for yourself. I mean, she had to take care of you from the day, from that point until you reach, they say, the age of what, 16, 17, 18. But here was a woman who, if she did not guide you to that process, you wouldn't have food, clothing, and all of the things and all that you have come to be in this life, if she didn't do that, because she'd be dead.
Well, let me counter that. What about the numerous instances where that same mother, as soon as the child is born, is dumped it off on a neighbor or a grandmother or aunt and was really never in that child's life?
Well, she's done a good thing. She realized her shortcomings, that she can't take care of that child, not in a position to do that. And so what she's done is given that child life again and the ability to giving it to someone who she know will ensure that this child who I brought into the world, I can't take care of it, but somebody else could do it for me.
That's, I mean,
you have to appreciate that.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I agree. Not every mother was a good parent. Yeah. Sometimes children need to look very hard to find the good in some of the neglectful or abusive or even absent mothers. But to honor mothers, I think, is simply to give them grace and, if necessary, forgiveness. Honoring some mothers can mean forgiving them, not speaking badly about them, praying for them. Sometimes the situation requires minimal or no contact. But if we allow toxicity in our lives to make us bitter and angry and anxious and basically create the framework for how we are as parents, that is just allowing a toxicity to go from one generation to the next.
But Doc, have you ever considered, and I've thought about this, that some mothers just don't know how to love. They have never experienced what it is to be love and how to give love. And there are many mothers in our country never experienced and who have not enjoyed a life that they can give their child that kind of love that they would want, because they have never experienced it, and you cannot give what you don't have.
I would say in order to truly follow Jesus, sometimes we must leave toxic people behind, which may mean your mother. Very sad to say that, but that's unfortunate. But I believe that is what Jesus meant when he said in Matthew 19:29, and everyone who has left houses or brothers or sisters or father or mother or wife or children or fields for my sake will receive 100 times as much and will inherit eternal life. So my thoughts are, forgive your mother, forgive your father or both as best you can. They too often had a childhood that didn't heal from abuse. They didn't know what they were doing to you because maybe they never experienced unconditional love. So just as you learn to love, sometimes because you were never loved, you don't know how to show love. And that is a cycle of destruction that's eroding the fabric of our society. And we need to address that urgently.
So there's a difference between nature and nurture, right? Nature is organic. From the fact that you're genetically female, you have ovaries, and you know you can get impregnated, and you become you're female. You become you carry a baby in the womb, and you know that egg gets fertilized. You have a fetus, and you know you're born. That's nature. But then. And that's organic. That happens no matter what, right? But then the nurturing aspect, that's where, history is important. And what you would have gone through, how you nurture, sometimes is an expression of the way you were nurtured yourself. And I think that's probably the aspect of this that we're discussing. And nurturing takes effort. It's not natural. It's a learned behavior. And again, if it is that you grew up in a toxic environment, and sometimes that's the behavior that you would have learned, then you then pass on or you act out what you actually learned. And that's how it gets passed to generation. And so in a way, I do agree with you. You got to sort of break that, right? And forgiveness is the way, because you can't change that environment unless you forgive. Forgive, forget, move on, right? And then you change the dynamics. Whoa. And in changing the dynamics, then you then now start a different legacy, different trend for whomever you are now passing that love on to.
I mean, sometimes the worst of experiences make us the strongest of persons. And sometimes we need to flip the script. Maybe your mother taught you what you don't want to be in a parent, and you can just actually be the opposite. So where you show, where you felt no love, then you give unconditional love. Where you felt no support whatsoever, then you are the pillar of strength and support always for your children. So
yeah.
Be what you may not have experienced.
But you have to have insight, right? Because your experience then shapes your attitudes, beliefs, and your actions. And if you don't have some insight into that experience you know, how you could alter that or change it, then you just relive it, continue to live it, and pass it on.
Well, I mean, what is holding our society together is the matriarchal structure that we've had through the decades, where mothers are the breadwinners. Mothers are the foundation of 78% of our homes. They're primarily raising our nation of children. So we need to herald them, and for the vast majority, doing remarkable jobs in the most trying and difficult of circumstances, particularly with all the financial strain out there, even in terms of inequality, in terms of pay for a female versus a male, even for the same job. Although women are maybe in some careers even excelling men,
but leaps and bounds.
Yes, yes.
In our career, in our industry, profession, women are, you know, they may be lagging in the Caribbean, but certainly there's no shortage of women in our industry.
And I respect greatly, it's difficult to be a surgeon. And for a female to become a surgeon, particularly also be a mother, it's the greatest.
It's a huge sacrifice.
It's a huge sacrifice. Sacrifice.
Well, you know, that is what makes our society so interesting. And what I mean by that, if, as you both observe, when you look at our society, and Doc, I would say that the women are making much more greater stride or progress than the men in our society. Because the men in our society, as far as I could see, they spend more of their time doing things that are non-productive, that does not take them in an area of success, while the women are always searching for ways to raise the level of the family and to get into business and to do things that the family could survive. I see that every day. And the different areas that I'm in show me most of the time they're all women.
And when we talk about female surgeons, those who go on and have a path of starting up their own businesses, many times it takes a decade of academics, post-high school education. It takes years of working this job, sometimes abroad, coming home and everything else. But by the time they've established themselves, many of them are in their late 30s, early 40s, they're already at 35, you become high-risk pregnancy.
Elderly prima gravidas, they call them.
Yes. And you mentioned, Mr. Calvin Green, a lot of men are not on par with them. So we talk about being equally yoked. There are a lot of women out there who would like to get married, and they cannot find someone they find compatible. And because of that, that woman goes a lifetime without even having a family. And that's unfortunate to see. And we see a lot of that amongst our female colleagues as well, Dr. Francis. And it's very difficult to see.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, we see it. You know, they sacrifice a lot. And again, man. But I think, you know, there was an intentional push to raise awareness among women and equality, and to empower them, and which it's been great. I always say that I believe that while that was great, and we've seen the outcome and the results of that, at the same time, I believe that a lot of young men are being left behind. And the same, intentionality and deliberate service opportunities need to be put in place for them to create in them what they need to be in the future. Because again, you know, like Ms. Green just said, a lot of the guys they're there. Men are around, but they're just not productive. And they find themselves doing a lot of non-productive things and things that doesn't support a family. And erode the fabric of what a nuclear family should be.
And the gender roles have changed over the decades, from the 50s, 60s, 70s, even going to the 80s, Calvin Green. What a woman was raised to be, she was raised to be a mother. She was raised to be a wife. She was raised to be a provider. She was raised to be there in the home all the time. Now, unfortunately, women have to play, have dual roles. They have to have two hats. They have to be the mother. They need to be the father. They need to be the protector. They need to be the financier. They need to be taking the kids to school. They need to take them to after-school activities. They need to be there doing their homework with them. They need to get the dinner ready. They need to pay the bills. They need to get the kids up in the morning. They need to get to work on time. They need to try to make it through the day, then go and continue. And by that time, life just passes them by. But when they had a nuclear family where there was a role for the mother, there was a role for the father, there was an extended family, usually close by, the neighbors were close-knit, where you're raising your own children. Now you don't even know your neighbors, where everybody is battened down, you don't speak to anybody. It's a far cry from years gone by, Calvin Green.
Well, you know, I want to say that part with the neighbor, because I'll get the reason why we are in this condition, and as far as I can see, is, you know, everybody thinks they are now enjoying the Bohemian dream. And so everybody have arrived. They got a nice home. They got nice cars and a nice job. And so they feel as if they don't need to speak to you anymore now. I mean, everybody have arrived. I mean, I don't need to talk to this fellow. I don't need to know who he is, because I could survive on my own.
Self-sufficient.
So that's the kind of mindset now we have in our country. And you could live in complexes right next door to the fella and not know who they are, because they're not interested in knowing who you are.
Right.
We have all arrived to this thing, or this level now, we don't really need to communicate or speak to each other.
We don't borrow sugar anymore.
And we're losing our sense of community. We're losing our sense of community. We're losing our sense of self. For our Bohemian society, we've become fragmented.
Yeah.
And with the upcoming elections, I think we all have to agree that the vast majority, if not all, Bohemians want a better tomorrow. They want a better tomorrow in the immediate future, and they want one for their children, their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren. So even though you have varying views in regards to who can provide that, we all are united in saying that we want a better Bahamas. So
yeah, ultimately, and that's the bottom line. And so all of this partisan feuds need to, on May 13, we all are going to be Bahamians, and we all got to move forward no matter who's in power, right? I'm looking forward to May 13.
And we will all be here on the radio speaking about the same topics. They're not going to change no matter who the government is.
And the sun is going to rise on May 13. The sun is going to set on May 13. And it's just, you know, we have to live, and we have to live with each other.
And I have always said this. I think we blame the government for far too much. Everything, it's the government's fault. It's our member of parliament who didn't do this for our child. It's our member of parliament who didn't get me the job that I wanted. It's not the fact that, you know what, I have a poor work ethic, that I didn't achieve the academic goals that I should have achieved so that I could have innumerable jobs that I'm qualified for. And we know that for the vast majority, and I know a lot of businessmen or persons who are managers of major companies, they'll have jobs available, and they may have 35 applications and maybe one. Maybe two persons are actually acceptable. We're falling short. We need to, if we had a strong home where we are raising strong, confident children who love striving for a better Bahamas and who love their fellow Bahamian, we're not going to have all this violence. We're not going to have all this crime. We're not going to have all this litter and everything else. We take pride in our surroundings. We take pride in ourselves. The last thing you want to do, we're talking about Mother's Day coming up. In days gone by, we wouldn't do certain things, Dr. Francis, because we didn't want to break our mother's heart. Now, we don't care. And We don't care whose heart we break. We don't care whose life we destroy. We don't care if we drive drunk and go and knock somebody down or change somebody's life forever because we smash into them. So shift going home to their family, and you got three drunk 20-year-olds in their car with no seatbelt, driving recklessly and crashing into this person who has a spinal injury and never is the same again, never able to provide for their family. And this happens over and over and over. There's too much recklessness and disregard for human life in our society.
If I could, you know, it's interesting that you say that, Doc, because I was with my mother today, and I spent a couple of hours with her. And one of the things that I grew up with, you had to ask to go in the fridge. And even today, I find myself asking my mother if I could go in the fridge, because that was something you just didn't go in the fridge. You had
conditioning. Yeah, you had
to ask to go in the fridge, and if you drank a juice or if you drank the water and you didn't put it back, that was a mortal sin. That was the level, and when she spoke, you didn't speak back. And fuck, you looked down. When she was speaking, because you eyeballed me, boy. That was the story.
And you learned to respect it.
And you learned to respect that.
As you grow older, then you recognize that, you know, that authority in the home, it translates to authority in the community. That's where you respect law enforcement and you respect, you know, people on the job as those who are in authority. And so you show that respect because you learn that respect even in the home.
That's right.
And that's what goes for it. So these are things, these are conditioning and sort of the culture of the home because that's what you did. That's what you learned. And mom was always the person to transmit that.
Yeah.
To teach that.
Yeah.
And that's the nurturing aspect of motherhood, right? Yeah.
And we're losing our way. Decades ago, when I went to Queens College, anytime any teacher or any adult came into the room, the whole class, immediately, you stand up, you say good afternoon or good morning. If you knew the person's name, good morning, such and such. And then you go and sit down. Here, you hear of incidents where students want to curse out the teacher or even intimidate them with violence.
You were conditioned, though, yes. Right? That was something you learned in primary school. That started in primary school. Someone walk in, you had to do that because it, if you didn't do it the first time, you were reprimanded about it, right? And that's how the behavior was reinforced. So it had to be somewhere where that there was no longer reinforcement of that behavior. And another type of behavior was encouraged, which was because you sat down, you didn't get up, nobody said anything to you, so that became the norm, right?
Correct.
And so this is how cultural norms shift, right? Where your neighbor could have disciplined your child when they felt, you know, that they were accountable for the behavior and they saw your child doing something wrong, they would discipline them, right? But now that's shifted, right? Because nobody wants you to touch my child. And he talks about having to look down. I mean, mom was a disciplinarian. I know I took a lot of licks from my mother, right? And I don't think my father ever touched me, right? But mom was a disciplinarian. Yeah. Nowadays, if that still comes, people talk about it in a different way, right? We have more of a timeout kind of culture. Mm-hmm. You raise your hand to hit a kid, that's a problem nowadays, right? And yeah, it's bordering on abuse, but I would say back then that was, we didn't call that abuse, we called that discipline.
Yeah.
So a lot of that has shifted now. And with that shift, that was sort of a conditioning. And yeah, some people went overboard. Some people really abused kids. And that abuse was then carried on because then the kids then learned that behavior and they learned that if someone did wrong to you that you need to lash out at them. And it got all kind of, it got really muddled, right? But we have lost our way. There's a balance somewhere that we have to find.
Yeah. And we mentioned 70-80% of our families are matriarchal where the mother is the primary foundation. Everything is the mother. Everything runs through the mother. The mother dictates the entire outlook of the family and the future of the family, which is extremely dangerous because we're living on a razor's edge. Because if anything happens to that mother, we're physicians and we talk about health, even mental health. If something, if that mother has a nervous breakdown, or if she goes in deep depression, particularly if you have young children, even older children, let's say the health disaster strikes, and we can try to impart all the information that we can. So we want to have our mothers live as long as possible because they are the cornerstone of the family. And
but you see, that's why you say nuclear and extended, right? That's the terminology that we use. Nuclear family include you, the mom, dad, and children. That's the nuclear family. But then there's the extended family. The extended family provided the support in the event that something happened. And this is why you also had godparents, right? Mm-hmm. So at least that was the idea.
Well, now if you have a mother who's 38 years old with 5 children in school, and that mother is diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer, yeah, or stage 3 colon cancer, the entire existence of that family changes forever. The trajectory of that family changes forever.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because children need nurturing, and most of the nurturing, you know, came by way of the mom. And if the children lose that nurturing, parent, or the parent that did the nurturing, then that's a problem, obviously. Mm-hmm. But again, this is where the extended family and then community.
When we talk about extended family, we know as physicians, we know going back to interns, where you have borders. We talk about the plague of borders in our Princess Margaret Hospital.
About that today.
We have men who are left there by their families, where nowhere to go, with no visitation, for not months, but years. It's an absolute rarity that you'd find a woman, a mother, a grandmother, an auntie who's abandoned at Princess Margaret Hospital with no one wanting them. Now that's common, and that says a lot about our society. Yeah. So a father who was never there,
yep,
or was there when it was abusive, yeah, when he needs you, yeah, a lot of these children said, no,
that's right.
You were not there for me. You were nothing but chaotic in my life. You never created anything more than destruction. I am who I am in spite of you, not because of you. And then these same persons who,
his father, biology or relationship?
Yes, correct.
Right?
Yes.
And that's the thing. There's the nature and the nurture. Life is about relationships. And if you don't have relationships, then those things happen. The reason why you have the borders. Now, sometimes there's some extenuating circumstances. People really just can't take care of you. Right, and sometimes it takes a lot of resources to take care of ailing parents, and perhaps they don't have the means to do so, or the support to do so.
But it doesn't cost them anything to visit them at least on a Sunday, and we would see that never even happens.
Agreed. But I mean, it there's a lot. I think it's a multifactorial issue, right? There's some people who. Boy, the borders, they just abandon. It's an abandonment, right? But there are some who are struggling themselves and doesn't have the means or whatever to take care of those people. And they don't have the extended family or the community to support. And so therefore, that's where it ends up. And it speaks to there's another factor too, right? As you age, and if you neglect, you know, women tend to affect their health. And we talk about health this is a health show. And there's another aspect of getting sick and not taking care of yourself. Let's say having hypertension, being obese, and all of the behaviors that totally destroy your body. And then later on in life, then you become, you know, then you're ill, but now you become dependent. So it's a dependency aspect, right? and which then now puts a burden on those who have to care for you. And that's something that is discounted by the people who don't take care of themselves.
But Doc, you know, right? For the women, but they find a way to do it for the mothers.
Yeah, they do. They do.
They all come together. But when it comes to the father, and as Dr. Pinto said, and a lot of fathers cause this on themselves based on their behavior throughout fatherhood.
So it goes, there's a lot of factors associated with it. Yeah. But again, this is why we try to encourage people to stay healthy, right? Because then there's that dependency factor. So you should stay healthy, and people don't always think about that. You become a burden, but that's really what it is. And I've seen where people are trying and doing all that they can and the best that they can with the little that they have, and they have to care for the ailing person. And maybe it's the father who would have smoked all his life or drink alcohol all his life and put, you know, have liver failure and all the other ills that are associated with smoking and the bad behavior. But then all of that comes back full circle, right? Now the child there who's trying to take care of themselves, they may have dependents themselves to take care of. And now the adult, now become a dependent. So there's a lot to unpack with the whole border situation. It's not as simple as that. But again, it's about relationships, and you have to have a relationship with your family.
One more point I want to say with that, Doc Hall. When you look at the black family, and not only here in the Bahamas, I would dare to say our neighbors to the north, the American and the Caribbean, when you hear success stories of individual people, whether it be male or female, the first thing they say is, my mother. My mother was here for me, and there's so many NBA players that I listen to on draft night, and they talk, the mother is always the first person.
The nurturer.
Yeah, no, well, the father wasn't even, some fathers weren't even there.
Weren't
even there. Dr. Pinto also gave another example. In working in human resources, the mother will take her child, and I've experienced this many times, where she would bring the boy looking. He's supposed to be looking for the job, you know. But she brings him and say, I want you to give him a job. And I say to her, well, why did he come himself? Why did you have to bring him? If you have to bring him, I don't really want to hire him. Because you bring him. But if he had come on his own, I would probably look at it. And the point that I'm making, that is why in our society the women are so strong and the men, I imagine that.
So you know, you saying that, I recall a show that we've had, and Greg, you may remember, I believe it was Ian Fernando who coined the term motherlessness, right?
Yes.
He did, right? And so what you're saying now was the mother was the one who did all of that, your mom taught you how to pray, it taught you how to tie your shoelace sometimes. Some moms teach you how to ride a bike, do all of these things. And again, mom take you to get a job, right? And mom encourage you in your schoolwork and do all of that. Father was not around. What happens now in a situation when mom is not there? So where's the so that's where the breakdown is. So it shows you how important moms are to entire society, because they're the focal point, they're the nucleus, really, and the fiber that keeps everything together
of our society. If we're relying only on mothers in the vast majority of cases of our families, when we talk about school pickup, by 3:15, 3:00. Most women in their professions are out on the street, in traffic, trying to get their child, and many times children from not just one school. Sometimes they're from 3 different schools. Yes. So you're going to that high school, this elementary school, and this nursery school, getting their kids, dropping them home, or dropping them to the grandmother, or dropping them to the neighbor. And then by the time they get back to work, it's 3:45. And by the time they get to any work, which is rare, the day is done.
It's true.
How many hours of the day are wasted on picking up children? Because there's no, it's not like the father can pick it up one day, then the mother. It's always primarily the mother. Yeah. So if half the women in our professions and all the workforce across the country are spending 2 hours in traffic picking up their kids, dropping them and everything else.
And you only mentioned the other extracurriculum activities.
Yes.
You opened up a lot there. That's a whole lot. Yeah. I mean, I'm guilty of that. Yeah. I was the drop-off person. I drop off in the morning. I take them, I drop off. But I never picked up. That was my contribution. And you know what? I was very happy to drop off because I developed good, strong relationships with my kids during the drop-off period. We talked about a whole lot of things. And as they all went away, you know, I don't do drop-offs no more because my kids are much older. But I miss that. Yeah. Because that was the time that I bonded with them. But you're right. I didn't do no pickup, right? And the reason, one of the reasons why I didn't, because I didn't have time to do all of that, yeah? And so I'm grateful to have had a wife and their mom to do that, to pick up. So, and that was a difficult job. And she, you're right. And all the after school activities and stuff like that, moms do that. Mm-hmm. And so we have to praise moms today. And I think that's what we're talking about in this show. We have to celebrate moms because they're the heroes.
They are.
The unsung heroes. They are, definitely.
And I spoke about the scenario of a 38-year-old mother with 5 kids. You talk about living a healthy life. What about it? She doesn't have a minute in any day to herself. Yeah. Imagine you trying to have your kids have a better life than you have. Sitting down with them, making sure they have a snack, a healthy snack when they get home. Spending some downtime where you listen to what the trials and tribulations of their day and what difficulties they may have gone through, try to support them emotionally. Then you get into the homework aspect where you have 5 different sets of kids doing 5 different sets of homework where you need to be there helping them. You have school projects that you got to help and do. Sometimes the kids are gone to sleep and you're still trying to do some help on the school project. By the time they're in the middle of the homework, you're trying to get a healthy meal on the table, which many times you're so exhausted, you just say, let me just go to the fast food and get something. They try to do it as little as possible. Then you're going to ask that same mother, go and spend an hour walking or jogging or getting exercise. It's just not possible.
The good thing about it, though, Greg, and I would say this to you because there's some scientific basis in this. All that work is still exercise.
I agree.
Okay?
I agree.
So, let's not discount that. Although, I mean, a lot of women out there may not be happy with that, but that's still exercise. That's movement, right? That's still exercise. It's still burn calories doing it, right? And I'm not encouraging that, but I'm just saying.
But really are living a stressed existence, just one event away from a complete breakdown and meltdown that is going to put their whole family in peril and their children in peril.
There's
so many women who are just holding on, barely holding on.
But, Doc, the women who live in what I call the heartland, to me, what you were explaining with some women who live in a nice home and she got it, the women who live in the heartland, who I know, who live in with no light, no water, don't know where the next, she can't even fathom trying to think where the next meal coming from, because she don't know where that coming from, and she living with no light, no water, 5 children, everybody. Her attitude to that is entirely different. And that's what I experience when you talk about the woman who live in the heartland and the woman who live maybe out west, who could decide, you know, she got 5 children, she could think about what she can cook today. This woman don't know what the, she ain't got nothing to cook.
Yes.
She no place to the and I once visited a house with 2 sisters with 18 children. I in my mind I said they must be sleeping shift, because I didn't understand how that could happen.
or they have rats nibbling at the children's leg when in because they're all sleeping on the floor.
Yeah.
They have the children going to the pump.
Yeah.
To have something to even try and bathe. And,
but I mean, you say heartline, but that still exists in some communities right now.
All
and,
over?
And
5 minutes in any direction from right where we are now?
Being in Grandstown.
Well, that's the heartland.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the heartland.
Right, yeah. So, but you know, again, even though you may have situations like that, right? Support is needed, right? It's where's the man in all of that situation, right? Where's the person to provide? The heartland, yeah, she may have all have to take care of the duties of the home per se, but then she shouldn't have to still worry about where the finances is going to come or where is food going to come from, because the provisions were made and were given because the man was in that situation. It's a community. You know, and that's what family was about. If she has to do that all alone, yeah, you can get burnt out. We use the term burnout. Listen, a lot of mothers just get burnt out. This is a new term that we've been using, burnout. How many mothers got burnt out taking care of children, right?
They had their first child at 15, their second at 17, 19, by the time they got four kids. Yeah. It's difficult to overcome that.
Where's the guy? Where are the guys? I mean,
well, that's what most women in this country would say.
In the heartland, they don't have that kind of conversation.
Well, we have a call coming in. Good evening. This is Urologist Speaks. Good evening. Hello. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hello. Good evening. Go ahead, sir.
Good evening. This is Dr. Who?
Pinto.
Dr. Pinto.
Yes.
This guy, they called me the Rebel Rouser Sparky.
Yes, I know who you are.
You know who I am. You know, we can get an English cycle right. I aren't Sparky. Now, I have a problem. When I say I have a problem, my doctor, my high school friend is Dr. Robin Roberts.
Yes.
He has diagnosed me. I don't have cancer, but I do have a large prostate.
Yes, you've said so many times on our show.
Uh-huh. But when I called your place and asked the lady about this, the financial quotes that she tells
you,
me.
We've been through this before. You said you were quoted some ridiculous amount, which makes absolutely no sense because we're bound by a coding book that determines the degree of severity of a actual office visit and how much you can charge. So it's not something that a physician just makes up. This is a coding book that goes across from the United States where the amount of time you spend with each patient, whether it's a first visit, second visit, the degree of severity in terms of the complexity of the case. So for you to say that you were given some quote that's outlandish and ridiculous makes zero
Sparky
sense.
Why don't you just see Sparky so he can stop calling him?
I've told him many times Sparky. Over the years, I'll see him for free.
I've never met Sparky, but I hear him on the radio all the time. Do you? Tomorrow. Wait, you in office tomorrow?
I am all in
what
office
time,
all
day. What time in office tomorrow?
I'm in office all day.
Sparky, go see Pinto tomorrow, man, and so that we can settle this issue.
All right, so let's get on topic again. So what we were talking about is honoring our mothers.
Yes.
Because without, we have a beautiful, fantastic country. And without our mothers, where would our country be? And obviously, we have some failings in our society, but without the mothers, everything would be 50 times worse. Agreed?
Agreed. Agreed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, I mean, before we judge a mother, many children need to remember that their mother may not be perfect. Maybe they did wrong, and we need to forget what they did wrong and the thousands of things that they did right. I mean, she may have not being given you the perfect childhood, but she gave you everything a heart could. So before you judge your mother, remember that she was learning to be a mother herself while fighting battles that you never saw. Maybe when you became a mother yourself or when you became an adult, you realized some of the battles that your mother may have been going through. So let's remember on this Sunday and every Sunday, it doesn't need to be a once a year thing. We need to honor our mother continuously. We need to look at how they sacrifice, We need to respect our mother because our mothers are not always going to be there. No. Our grandmothers are not going to be there. How many persons out there who lost their mother or lost their grandmother or lost their aunt would do anything, would give up anything for that one chance to have this conversation, to have one last hug, to have one last experience with them? And I think too many of us take it for granted that our mothers, our grandmothers are going to be there forever. Yeah. So let's cherish them. Let's learn from them, even if it means learning from their mistakes. Nobody's perfect. Let's learn our history. Let's learn our family tree. Let's spend that 2 hours with your grandmother and your great-grandmother and learn about what life was like in the Bahamas in years gone back, what they have experienced as a child, what they went through to become who essentially they are now and who they made your mother be and who they ultimately made you become. So we need to honor those who have sacrificed for us. We need to live. If mistakes were made in the past, we need to leave it in the past. Yeah.
Well, you know, Doc, like I said, I spent 2 hours with my mother today, and I spend time with her every week because I realized one day she may not be there. And at 87 now, she's not at her optimum. And so you look at this and I appreciate the years that she has been a wonderful mother to me, and I believe that I am the person today because of her, what she has poured into me. She was a school teacher for more than 40 years. And so I had as a young boy, I had a rough time. Being the child of a school teacher, that was not fun. You know, so I'm... So the point is, you're right. You've got to make time and spend time with your mom. You never know when that day will not, or she will not be there.
But as you said, you wouldn't be what you are now without your mother.
Yes.
What if you didn't have your mother?
Yeah.
What would you be now?
I would hate to think of it. I mean, true hug and wisdom. I would hate to think what I may have become without that. So I really don't know. I know what I am now, and I know just because of her, but I would hate to think what it would be like without her. So I will not answer that question.
But we need to look at that because that's the way of life for too many young men in our society. They didn't have any guidance, or they had a mother who essentially was a child themselves, who never gave them any hope for the future. We have too many children raising children. We have too much hopelessness and despair in our society. And it's going cycled from one generation to the other. Instead of, you know what, my mother made mistakes. She got pregnant at 14. She was involved with the wrong men. Let me, as a young lady, do the opposite. Let me, even though my mother might be a maid, let me respect what she does, waking up all hours in the morning to go and work a hard day's work for a decent pay, to give me a better life. Let me honor her by working hard, by sacrificing, by getting an education, by getting a profession, by giving a better life to her. And you know what? Not making the mistakes that she made and giving my children what I never had. But instead, you know what? They recycle the same mistakes over and over. Over and over. And that's a crying shame.
But do you know many mothers who work in the straw market? And I use that because I hear so many stories who worked in our straw market, not now, but way back then, and were able to send their children to school. Most of them went off to school.
Bench.
Yeah.
You know, the mom was the CFO of the family.
Yeah.
Chief Financial Officer.
You are so right. Because I wonder how they were able to do that.
They did it. They knew how to budget.
Yeah.
They knew how to budget. Okay. They budgeted. And that's the first lessons in budgeting that you get is at home.
So what?
And they rationed.
What changed? Why did we have a community? Why did we have neighbors loving each other? Why did we have an extended family? Why did we have the nuclear family in the 70s and in the 80s? What is change, what has gone wrong, where, why is our society headed in a different direction?
Because in those days, everybody was in a way, in my opinion, equal. Equal in the sense that, as Doc said, you know, we could borrow sugar and a can of cream, and you cooked and you invited me over. And so everybody was, there was an equilibrium in the society, and people understood that across the border. Then all of a sudden, we all got educated, and we went off to university. And as I said, we get a nice job, and we get a nice car, and we have our nice palatial home. And so everything became what I call segmented. But in those days, there was an equilibrium among the people who walked from Market Street to East Street, whatever, through somebody's yard. And I walked through many yards. I mean, to get to another road. And they knew who I was. And they knew who my parents were. And so we had a sort of equilibrium in the society. And then we all got the Bahamian dream, and it caused us to go in a different direction.
I think we have, is obsessed with instant gratification. Yeah. They don't want to make the sacrifices. Obviously, this is a very broad-based statement, but there are too many Bahamians, and no one's going to argue with that. Young persons, middle-aged or even older, who want everything right away without having to make the sacrifice. They all want the prestige of being a household name of Dr. Wesley Francis and having all the accoutrements and everything else, but they don't know the living hell that Wesley Francis had to go through and the sacrifices he had to go through. And when he was dead broke in residency and getting 2 hours sleep and catching living hell and to the point of exhaustion, when he had classmates who were building their second home and he didn't have a dollar to rub together, they don't know. They want to see the end result, and they say, oh, okay, this one has achieved this, and they don't know what it took. Yep. I mean, I have several colleagues. Sometimes I think about it. If I had to go through what I had to go through in surgical residency, which is basically modern-day slavery and abuse, legalized abuse, I don't know if I'd go through it again, because no human should have to go through it. Would you go through it again, Wesley?
Not at this stage of my life, but I mean, it taught me how to sacrifice. It taught me resilience. It taught me how to be goal-oriented. That, to me, that's like being in the military, and everybody who goes through the military gets a level of discipline. So everything that I did and sacrificed during that time is the discipline that I learned, and now I carry that discipline. That's how I take care of people.
Yes.
So all of those things build us and create in us who we are today.
Yes.
I can't imagine myself without that experience. Right?
Well, so
just say,
yeah.
Like today, let's say tonight, if somebody needs our help and we fall back, we had to be able to stay up at 3-4 in the morning taking care of a problem to solve somebody's problem to make them better. So again, and that's just our training had to be that rigorous to allow us to be able to take care of human life and not take it for granted.
Yes.
Right. Because yeah. Listen, if somebody needs me at 3 o'clock in the morning to tomorrow morning, I got to get up and go.
Yes.
But if I didn't have that kind of training, I probably wouldn't have the fortitude or even the discipline to do so. So, you know, yes, it was human slavery.
And then we're honoring mothers. And when you wake up and go 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm sure your wife her night is gone, because she's not going to sleep until you're back home safely.
No, she sleeps through the night. But you're right. She gets the phone rings and she gets waking up, right? And all back then in those days, the pager went off, and you know they wake up, but. You're right, but I just want to say to everybody, right, whatever you go through in life shapes you. It gives you the discipline. It helps you with resilience to be able to bounce back, right? So good, bad, ugly, everything that you would have gone through in your life shapes who you are today, shapes your view of the world, and how you respond to different situations. And so I don't regret any of that. It was hell, but I don't. I mean, there was good times, there were bad times. There was times of being happy. There were times where we cried with patients. There was a lot of sad times. There was a lot of joy too, right?
I mean, in surgery, you see the worst of mankind in terms of trauma,
you see,
in terms of disease processes, in terms of the sadness of a disease on a family and on a patient. It's difficult if you say, all
right. You see human suffering, yeah. Right? Whether it's because of violence or because of disease.
I mean, you and I will say we would have the very unique experience that sometimes we need to tell 10 people, different people, on the same day that they have cancer. And each one is a blow, and you got to be there for them. And it's not easy. It tears away yourself. But when we look at our society, Calvin Green, the typical 6-year-old boy, what do you want to be when you grow up? I want to play in the NBA. Typical 9-year-old, what do you want to do? I want to be a rapper. They don't understand what it takes and what percentage of persons make it in the NBA. They don't look at 70-80% of professional athletes are bankrupt within 5 years of retirement. They don't realize that if they became a skilled contractor, they would do far better than most NBA players, and it's a lot greater chance that they can become a skilled contractor. They'll do much better being a surgical oncologist like Dr. Wesley Francis than a typical professional athlete, because a professional athlete only has a finite number of years to be successful. And then after that, goes downhill.
Well, I have the privilege every week, and tomorrow is it, I speak to a group of boys between the age of 8 and 12 every Thursday at Aubrey Sales School, and about 25, 30 of them come in from the boys club, and I speak to them. Tomorrow I'll be doing that, and I look forward to that as I try to in some way guide the direction of their life and asking them in life. And the good thing is that a lot of them are what I call, in a way, realistic. You know, they want to be policeman or defense force officer or a doctor or something like that, or even the thought or entertain the thought of going off to university. And so speaking with these boys every week is a wonderful thing for me, and in a way it gives me some hope that all may not be lost.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, all may not be lost.
I mean, what are some of the major obstacles that you see these children are facing, these young boys?
Well,
do they have hope for the future? Do they believe in a brighter Bahamas? Is their plan to make the Bahamas a better place, to live their life in the Bahamas, or are they trying to get on to greener pastures elsewhere?
As you listen to their various stories, I think as I evaluate that, a lot of them are optimistic. There are some who come from very challenging families, and they come from very challenging experiences, and what they have to go through to come to school and survive. You know, when you listen to it, it becomes heart-wrenching. But I think, like I say, it looks good. The future looks good as I talk to these group of boys and what they want to do and how they view our country. And that's what my job is, in a way, to try and help them to see that there is a better way, that where you come from and where you end up don't have to be the same place.
You're not defined by your circumstances. That, you can rise above it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Closing remarks, Mr. Calvin Green, as we have Happy Mother's Day.
My closing remark could be two things. Happy Mother's Day to all of the wonderful mothers of there who helped to make our country the way they are. And I recognize my mother for the contribution and what she poured into me. As we go into the elections, wishing everybody the very best.
Safe election, obviously.
Safe election.
And Dr. Yeah. Wesley Francis.
Yeah, we just need to honor the mothers out there. Happy Mother's Day. And let's be respectful of each other, others as we go through in this electoral process. It's a right that was given unto us, and we should preserve that. And everybody should go out there, be safe, vote, and you know, enjoy the time.
My final thoughts are, one of the best lessons a father can teach his children is how he treats his mother. So respect isn't explained, it is demonstrated. How you speak to their mother, how you honor her, the affection you show her is a blueprint for how that man is going to love his future children and his future wife. So strong men and women are raised by respecting each other and by respecting each other in their actions. For mothers, happy Mother's Day to all mothers in the nation. You are the pillar of our society, and we thank you endlessly. You are unsung heroes, as Dr. Wesley Francis mentioned. The greatest of all gifts in the world is the gift of life. There's nothing that can compare to the gift of life provided by your mother, a gift that you can never give yourself. So finally, a man is who his mother makes him and who his father shows him to be. Have a safe Christmas. Good evening. This is Urologist Speaks. Make you feel like a champion. Rise up again. Let nothing keep you down. Live your best. Yes, the urologist.